from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. This is the Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Mone, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Here's your host, Dave Edwards.
Chancellor, welcome back to the program. When we talked last month on the program, we were just kind of in the first days of learning what the governor had put in the budget bill and how it would affect UW System and UW-Milwaukee. Obviously, a month has passed since then. What do we know now that we didn't know a month ago?
Well, thank you for having me first, Dave. It's always a pleasure to share observations and updates and perspectives with you. The things that we've learned at this point is a little more specificity around the size of the cuts, how those would be administered across the UW system. We're getting some further understanding of the public authority, although there still remain some questions about that. I think that over the last 3 weeks or so, there's been deep discussion within the Joint Finance. Well, I'm sorry, Joint Finance hasn't received this, but the Legislative Fiscal Bureau has been looking at this, and they'll be issuing their statement and their briefings next week on all the budget parameters. So we look forward to hearing and learning more about that. But I understand that the initial documents at this point are just starting to be released, and they're huge, and there will probably be a lot for the Joint Finance Committee to digest. So we have, in the last month, continued to have conversation with a number of individuals who are in the legislature, who seem to be very, very open to discussing the size of the cuts and how those might be mitigated. And there's lots of support in the community. A lot of individuals over the last month have really reached out and asked a lot of questions about what does this mean? How will UWM be impacted? And so we're trying to understand that ourselves, and we're trying to put good plans together for that. And we've only just begun, because we really won't know until the budget goes through all the different stages that it has to go through, how we'll manage the different cuts.
In a way, that kind of makes it worse, right? Because you're starting to talk about things, but yet you don't know exactly what the numbers are you're talking about.
Well, you're right, because there is a deadline, meaning that on June 30 or July 1, we have to be ready to manage the financial impact of these. And so the longer that it goes on that we don't know, the harder it is. So it would really be irresponsible for us not to plan. So we are planning. We're looking at ways in which we can be more efficient, as well as at the same time being equally effective. If we can continue to focus on the quality of the education and the research that we do, what are ways that we can be more efficient and still try to maintain our standards? It'll be tough.
Well, this has certainly spurred quite a bit of discussion and dialogue, not only within the university, I'm sure, but also, in the community. And there's been a lot of discussion about what is the role of a university, what role does the university play beyond educating students. If there is a significant cut to UWM and you struggle to deal with that cut on July 1, what is the impact that goes beyond, I guess, students? What is there an impact on the larger community?
Well, some of the key business folks that have talked to me have raised questions about the size of the labor force. Individuals predict, in both our own state data and then our local business associations, including the MMAC, have talked about the talent shortage by 2023 is anticipated between 90 and 100,000 employees. And in that context, if you look at the number of students that we graduate really position ready across all our 14 schools and colleges, we could take care of filling almost half of that gap. We graduate 5,600 students on an average year, and that's a sizable way to address that. I think there's other effects as well, though. I think if you look at in the community, the types of engagements that we have in terms of broader economic development, the 200 patents and patent applications, a combination of patents and applications, the number of student startups, the number of alumni startups, the number of things on the entrepreneurial front. If you look at the ways that every single school and college has partnerships in the community deeply embedded, whether it's in nursing, education, architecture, urban studies, the list is endless. The business school, it's remarkable what we do in all the different areas. So there's that And the other aspect that many legislators have talked to me about is we look oftentimes to other states and we see that there's oftentimes your large metropolitan areas that oftentimes have a research university at the hub, at the center, and they ask questions about how can we have Milwaukee operate more like that. And boy, that's my kind of sweet spot when we get to those questions and discussions, because I really think UWM plays a special part. We're blessed in this community to have 20 or 21 institutions of higher learning, great, great academic institutions, but we operate in a significant way to really add important research to the equation. And that research is why so many companies partner with us, why so many organizations who want to have some of the cutting-edge thinking, whether it's Johnson Controls or GE or Rockwell or you name the organization, we have firm-specific partnerships. There's 125 different organizations that we have anywhere from a few up to double digits types of relationships with. So those are deep and ongoing.
So I want to come back to some of those relationships, but actually I think you hit on a really interesting point, because one of the things that I have read about in some of the comments that have been posted to social media and elsewhere are people who have been critical of the university system. They've said – I've read things such as, well, it's universities are just liberal bastions of knowledge that will never help anybody get a job. Now, what you just alluded to is job-ready skill sets – from a wide variety of areas. So there is still a focus on making sure that students graduate and they can find a job.
Yeah. Well, you're cutting across two of our big, we have really five thrusts that I've been trying to drive at since I've been chancellor, and including my time as interim chancellor. And those, if we hit on them briefly, student success, engaged and relevant research, the things that we do with respect to community partnerships on a deeper level, building a culture and climate that supports those, and then finally working on a brand recognition, visibility, and image. And the things you just asked about really hit on student success. And when you stand back and think about what is student success, it means students who graduate, but students who have quality experiences, students who learn through internships, things that they're doing that you can really do optimally in Milwaukee. UW-Milwaukee provides those opportunities that you don't get oftentimes outside of this area to really have the deep partnerships. And then to your point about the research, the type of research that's often done in an urban environment really has very practical relevance for the community in so many different areas. Our Helen Bader School, we have scholars who are working on the ways in which music or listening to your favorite music, trying to examine, does that help stave off dementia? We have researchers who are working in education to understand different types of pedagogy, different curriculum, what helps with learning, childhood learning, reading strategies, and so forth. But just over and over and over through, work we do in the School of Freshwater Science and the Zilber School of Public Health, very, very applicable to the issues that exist here in Milwaukee. And it goes so far to say is, name the issue in Milwaukee, and we've usually got somebody who is engaged or working on it in some capacity. And I paraphrase there a little bit, David Haynes, our senior editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in the community, who really has pointed that out before.
Mm-hmm. I guess you've talked before on this program about some of these partnerships that you were starting to outline a bit earlier, and maybe to use Johnson Controls as a good example, because I know the university has a very close relationship with Johnson Controls, and it's from my perspective, it seems to be mutually beneficial.
Yeah, it really is. They spend their engineers and their senior scientists spend an awful lot of time on campus, just like we spend at Johnson Controls with respect to our students and faculty who really really share the workload. And advance lithium ion storage, and they helped sponsor a recent appointee for us, a gentleman who will be joining our faculty along with UW-Madison. We have a joint appointment that Johnson Controls has helped advance. This is an endowed professorship on advanced energy storage, and so this is for use in electric vehicles, space, military, and other applications. It's really some of the best work that's done. And this is a gentleman I'm talking about, Dr. Xu, has 12 years of industry experience that is beneficial. He worked for Rayovac outside of Madison, and he's coming in as one of the leading chemists in an engineering area to work on this important area. Johnson Controls tremendously benefits, but we benefit. We've placed 16 students that have received positions with Johnson Controls over the last 3 or 4 years because of that. So it's that pipeline, and again, it's student success, students who are ready to work by the things that they've learned working side by side with those in industry.
Mm-hmm. And just the fact that you've placed those 16 students and you have this relationship with Johnson Controls, I mean, I think it also, in some respects, it would have to elevate the way UWM is perceived, not only by major industry, but also by the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one partnership that we talk about. But in fact, like I said, there's 125 of those, and the pathways to success have led to so many wonderful opportunities. Companies, there's several major companies in the area that approach 1,000 employees from UWM, and there's dozens and dozens of them that have quite a few of our employees that really do show the power. And if you look at the aggregate numbers with 160,000 living alumni and 74% of those that stay in the state, it makes sense. And of those, a majority stay in southeastern Wisconsin. So we really power the workforce. We power it with both our talent, but we also have the ideas. And it's that research, intellectual contribution that's added in a very important way. So I continue to talk about those twin engines. And that's what I think people are concerned about when they think about, you know, the future of UW-Milwaukee and this region. Because with the commerce, with the population, with the diversity, with all the things you have in this region, it's so important to the state. And so if we can grow and continue to contribute in the ways that we have, we can strengthen the entire state. And so that's the nature of the discussions that I'm having with a lot of folks in the community who are so supportive of what we're doing and frankly see that as an important investment for the future.
You know, the number that you cited about the number of students who stay in the area after they graduate is different from the discussion that we expected to have a few years ago when there was much more discussion about brain drain. Why would people want to stay here in Wisconsin when there are better jobs elsewhere? So has this changed, or is this pretty much constant in terms of the number of students who stick around?
You know, that number that I cite doesn't probably allow us to really look at the time dimension, you know, how many of those students leave immediately, how many come back.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really important point. But one of the things we've always seen at UWM is we tend to have a very high percentage of students who stay in the state. So whether they're engineers, computer scientists, nurses, historians, you name the field, we tend to keep an awful lot of folks. Now, here's the question in the future, you know, relative to other states, will we continue to keep that talent? I remember years ago, having been in Milwaukee for a while, we were quite challenged, and the Midwest was, but especially Wisconsin. And I think the economic strength helps that. Is there a job? My son is a student at UWM. I want him to be able to stay in this area, to have a career path, to have the kinds of quality of life issues that we all do. And that, I think, like a lot of parents, raise those questions all the time. So I continue to see where the economic vitality and the role that we play is hand in hand. We can help make Milwaukee even more successful, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit more about student success, because I know it's something that you've been working very hard on, really even during your interim status on this. And you've tried to make sure that there was, you know, a path for students, that they would be successful while they were at UWM, and they would have the skill sets that they'd be able to go on and find new jobs. Given the budget concerns that we started this program talking about, I mean, are you concerned about the ability of being able to sustain that going forward?
Yeah, if you look at student success, I see at least 3, maybe 4 or 5 critical dimensions. Student retention requires with some of the remediation and some of the issues that you have when you have an access mission, you really do need to focus on class size. You need to focus on some of the tutorial, some of the applied, you know, really, really hands-on focused learning. That's a challenge. When we look at the quality of the instruction in terms of the research that's done in a one-on-one basis, it's harder to do that when you have budgetary challenges. The issues of graduation, if you can't offer as many classes in as robust and as schedule a way, then time to graduation may be affected. I think about the preparedness for the careers that students want and we have often provided. I think that will continue to be upheld. The quality of the student experience, the types of things we do to support students while they're in class, from an advising to a lot of the extracurricular activities, those can be affected. There's no question about it. So that to me is you know something we have to do everything we can to preserve, because student success is central.
Mm-hmm. Another facet of this is the way in which faculty and students interact with members of the community. And it is probably one of the worst things an interviewer can do is to say to the person he's interviewing, tell me that story that I heard you tell once before, but I'm going to do that to you. I saw you speak recently at the Rotary Club here in Milwaukee, and you told the story of the little girl who didn't have a fully developed hand. Tell that story, because I think it really demonstrates that kind of connection point that we've been talking about.
Yeah, this is a powerful story, and thank you for asking about that. And I won't do it justice. I'll tell you that up front. We've got a great video on our website about Shay's hand. And so Shay Stolenwerk found us on the web and learned that we do work in prototyping and arts and design, and we're able to work with her and her family with our students. And there were two key faculty that were involved, Frankie Flood and Adream Blair, and teams of students who worked on helping Shay develop a hand that allows her to do things that other kids do, that other people do with their hands. And it's this wonderful experience that she was able to teach all of us through her journey what a hand meant to her and what a working hand would require in terms of teams of students and faculty working together. And it just really powerfully shows the types of impact when I talk about community engagement. When you look at the life that has changed in such a dramatic way, that's so powerful. And recently, I learned that Microsoft has ordered 50 copies of that hand that they would like to take to scale, and they'd like to offer this for other people. In fact, after that Rotary discussion, a gentleman came up to me, introduced himself, and said, "I can really relate to that." And he showed me his hand that had the same formation, the same structure as Shay's, and talked about how relevant. And he said, you know, I could have used this hand earlier in my life, but it's just a powerful story. It brings tears to your eyes to think about how research, how teaching, how it all ties together in such a powerful way. And it really epitomizes, I think, what we do in Milwaukee, and just underscores how it's the best of both worlds if we can bring everything together like that.
Yeah, I will maybe have to have a link to that video on our page here, because it is such a powerful video. And we see that when you see that little girl and that little girl's eyes, that she now has a hand. I mean, there were people sitting around me who were wiping their eyes, because that's such a powerful, powerful story. Those kinds of partnerships, does that generate revenue for a university? I mean, if the university kind of gets into that business of prototyping, not just hands, but other things, I mean, does that help the university financially as well?
Well, it can. On an individual, personal basis, some of the work that we would do in some of our schools and fields has that very directly, but a lot of it does not. A lot of it is basically contributing to the larger social welfare, contributing to the greater good. If we can get grants, and especially if with our partnerships we can get grants, that's where the power really lies. So I was in Washington, D.C. this last summer, and I think I talked about this a little bit on a previous show, but we're working with Department of Energy, Department of Defense, Department of Commerce, a number of different federal agencies to look at grants that would benefit business and academe as well as the region overall, because of advances that we're working on in water, in manufacturing, in smart design, and in many, many other areas. And so the benefits, as an example, the Johnson Controls Partnership, $30 million have flowed into this area because of that type of important research. If we can do that in partnership, whether it's on our innovation campus in conjunction with the medical college and other healthcare providers, or with private industry, or with social service agencies in a variety of fields, that enriches the community in powerful ways. So some of this also can be through some of the licensing and patenting and business startup types of things. But at this point, we're not in an equity position in firms or things like that. Those are really launched out of the university and really do benefit the community.
Mm-hmm. You're fortunate in many respects because you know your university resides in a major metropolitan area, so you can develop relationships with companies like Johnson Controls and many others just by nature of the fact that they are here. Is UWM unique in that? Or, I mean, are the other campuses developing similar partnerships around the UW system, let's say?
I would argue, and having been at probably about half the schools in the UW system at this point of the four-year schools, I would say that virtually all of the UW system schools have developed really strong and powerful and important partnerships in their communities. Not only are they oftentimes among the largest and leading employers in their respective geographic areas, they are seen as the answers to the economic future of the citizens in their respective areas. And that's true in really all the different locations that we reside in.
So earlier you said that, you know, name a community problem and chances are there's a faculty member or somebody doing something about it. You know, I think about, for example, the nursing school, which is, you know, we read all the time about how there's going to be a shortage of nurses and healthcare workers in this country. And obviously you have a nursing school that can graduate nurses. As you're dealing with cuts, maybe not just in nursing, but are you concerned about the ability or the necessity of the university to contract and be less involved in some of those areas?
Well, that's a very practical example you're asking about. Let me give you some specifics on that. We have a nursing school that's out of over 500 nursing programs in the United States. By U.S. News and World Report standards, it's in the 94th or 95th percentile in terms of rankings. We turn away 135 qualified applicants every year. Hmm. And when you look at the nursing shortage, it's the number one shortage in the state. True. I mean, there's no other area. It's not just going to be a shortage. It is, and this affects all of us. I don't care if you're 1 month old or 100 years old. We're all in need at some point or another for qualified healthcare delivery, and nurses are the largest number of folks in the healthcare delivery area. So just like the physician shortage, around which we've seen some growth in terms of the medical school expansion we've seen in this state, which is a wonderful thing, what the Medical College of Wisconsin has done, we potentially could be going the other way, because if we're having a disinvestment, that could challenge us. So I put it in that context to look at the practical issues. We could make a similar argument for engineers. Engineers, if we can make investments in the UW system, we provide – this UW system provides 70% of the nurses in the state – I'm sorry, engineers in the state, 70% mm-hmm. from UW system. Well, that's something that you know can be challenged if we can't continue that investment. So I do think we will be strategic. I do think we're going to look at those high-need areas. I'm optimistic about us being able to really continue to provide that. But it's going to be difficult, because the ideal scenario would be when the Board of Regents passed a $95 million investment, that would have been something that would have enabled us to continue to grow in a positive way on a number of different fronts.
So in all of these areas, as we've talked about today, the ability of the university to do great things, contribute a lot to the community and the region. As we go back full circle, as you're thinking about the kind of cuts, the kinds of a way in which the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee is going to have to adapt to whatever happens in the future, you maybe stay up at night think about this, but what are your sort of like, we can't afford to retract in these areas? What are your sort of like, you know, lines in the sand for you saying these are investments we can't stop making?
You know, that's an important question, and it's so early in the process that our budget team that's working on this and the folks that will be working on this, we haven't formulated those hard lines in the sand. I would offer two general ideas, though. One is that, as I mentioned earlier, student success, research profile, and community engagement, those are non-negotiable. We have to maintain those. Now, where we will do that, in what areas, that's the question you're really asking. I can't answer that today, but I will tell you the other piece of this that is so critically important to me, and I think everybody on our campus, and that's some of the tenets around how we continue to protect our system of shared governance, our tenure, and indefinite status for our faculty and staff. Those are things that are the shared governance principles around which we built this great system, and I wouldn't want to see in any way those compromised. So that's
Why?
Important.
Why?
Well, a couple of reasons. One is that we have done, through engagement and involvement, the type of consensus building that we have is much like when I was in private industry. I had a choice. I could be a top-down autocratic manager, going back to the management style of earlier eras, almost a militaristic style. Or I could be participative. I could be asking and engaging groups what their ideas were and how to really move us forward. In a research and teaching environment, I have to tell you, that's the best way to operate. It's absolutely critical that we get the ideas, shared wisdom. I think that if people buy in, if they understand that, it's just essential for us to have that. So that's with respect to shared governance. Pieces with respect to indefinite status and faculty tenure, those are important because we take care of our people and they take care of us, and we have done that for a long time. And we have remarkably dedicated, hardworking, talented individuals. If we were to change any of that and the rest of the country were not, we would have talent loss that would be tremendous. And you know, if the rest of the country went down that path and we were looking at should we or shouldn't we, maybe we'd have a little different look at that. But I'm not advocating that. But I just think for us, just as a very practical matter, what faculty or staff would be encouraged to stay, and how would we in the future attract and retain other mm-hmm. talent? So I look at the practical aspects, and I just think it's taking care of our people. It's consistent with the values that I'd like to always see us uphold.
Mm-hmm. We talked actually on our program last month a little bit about student enrollment and where you saw that headed. And in the few minutes we have remaining, I mean, are you concerned that just given the headlines of what's going out there right now, that will impact student enrollment, that students will say, well, you know, I might have gone to UWM, but I'm not concerned. I'm very concerned about my ability to graduate in 4 years because of the cuts, so I'm going to go to Minnesota or Illinois or somewhere else?
Well, it could. There's no question that I think parents and students do look at this today and have questions like that. I'd like us to get through this in a manner where we can continue to say that we're not only concerned with and keeping those as a high priority, but we're going to actually do better on those dimensions that you just mentioned with regard to how quickly students are getting through. I'm putting in place a scorecard approach that's going to look at our retention, it's going to look at our graduation, look at time to degree. We're coming up with what I think are some novel approaches to improving those, the quality of how we're teaching some of the remedial education, the specific things that we're doing around some of the arrangements we'd like to make in terms of support through financial aid and scholarships. I'd like to see us moving much more aggressively on those. And frankly, we've been for the last decade not making a lot of progress on some of those key statistics. So I'd really like us to be driven toward measuring those and improving and be able to tell the students, again, student success is critical. That's a foundational. And I mentioned earlier, as a non-negotiable, student success is front and center. We have right now, to answer the question a little differently, we have 28,000 students at UWM. We're going to take great care of those students. We are looking at next year having enrollment growth continue. And from the admissions and acceptances at this point, we're on a great pace. But I understand the questions that might be out there, and yet I want to keep the pedal down and keep us moving forward.
I think we should end on an optimistic note, as a matter of fact. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Dave.
You've been listening to The Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Mone, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. If you would like more information, go to uwm.edu/chancellor.